This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth with Christopher John O'Shea.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. It's great to be with you.
Well, I'm glad. It's good to have you back from tax season. You kind of disappeared on me for 3 months.
In a tax hole, as it were. Just throwing food into the office every now and again.
We did that. Anyway, we're here tonight, Money, Riches, and Wealth, and this is our night that we have a guest. Do we have a guest, Chris? No? No caller? No one called in. All right. So, Chris, we don't have a guest. We could be the guest for her. Why don't we do that? We'll talk about the book as if we are her. And Chris is going to call her, so find out what happened. It's a good thing we get a backup phone number. And I didn't even look at the board to see if she was here or not yet, you know? So anyway, our guest tonight, if she shows up, is called Emily Guy Birkin. And her book that we were going to interview her on is The 5 Years Before You Retire. What should you be doing? Well, sure. You know, obviously you should be doing something well before 5 years before you retire. But if you hadn't done anything, when you get in that 5-year range, you better really start, kicking into gear to get yourself ready. Because, you know, one of the things that she talks about and I always talk about is that retirement is one of the greatest things that will ever happen to you. But it's also one of the most stressful things that will ever happen to you because, you know, people are worried. And she talks about the 5 things they're worried about. Do I have enough saved? Am I going to make it? Am I going to run out of money in my lifetime? What taxes am I going to have to pay? And, well, you know, what's my tax bracket? Am I not going to have to pay anything now that I'm retired? Or where am I going to have to pay as much or whatever? And how am I going to do that? What's my lifestyle? Will I have to cut back? Am I going to have to spend a lot less money because, you know, I'm not making 100,000 a year? And is that going to change my lifestyle? And, what, you know, should I sell the house, move somewhere cheaper? And then lastly, what if I get sick or when my spouse gets sick? How am I going to handle that, you know? And so these are big concerns that people have. And yet with good planning, you know, you're not able to cover every single facet of everything you're worried about.
Right.
But you'll at least know that there's a plan. There's a fail-safe. There's a way to relieve the pressure that would happen if any of those did and help you make those decisions. You know, should I move to a cheaper place? Matter of fact, I always tell people, you know this too, is when I do seminars, and I do quite a few retirement seminars at corporations and universities around town.
Right. The governor's office is not going to have you advertise for the state of Maryland.
The state of Maryland is not going to have me on their commercials for Retire in Maryland. But, you know, I have a slide that says very simply, if you want to turbocharge your retirement and you can do it, consider moving out of Maryland when you retire. You know, because it's just high cost of living state, mm-hmm. and it's a high tax state to live in.
Right.
So, you know, and then when people ask me, well, Drew, where do you move to? And I say very simply, every client is different. But if you make more than $100,000, you want to consider Florida. If you will make less than $100,000, you want to consider Delaware. And there's reasons for that.
In retirement. If your income in retirement are at those levels.
Okay, I guess she's on the line. Well, Chris, you want to bring her on the line? She's in a different time zone. Emily, so you thought it was 6 o'clock your time. What time zone
Local
is that?
Time.
Central time, right? She's in Wisconsin.
You're in Wisconsin, Central time.
That's correct. Yes, and usually I'm pretty cognizant of the time differences, but for some reason I didn't even think about it this time.
Yeah, well, normally Mariah, who set this up, normally also is cognizant of that and saying, you know, hey, make sure you know it's 6 o'clock Eastern time. So no big deal. You're here and you're happy to be here. Hopefully.
Yes, I am delighted.
We were just talking about your introduction. You have the 5 things people are worried about. Do you have enough saved? what taxes will I pay? Am I going to have to cut back in retirement? Should I sell the house and move somewhere cheaper? What happens if I get sick? And I was talking about that. I do a lot of retirement seminars for local corporations and universities here in Maryland, and those are absolutely the five big things they're worried about.
Absolutely. Yeah, those are, people do tend to worry about ahead of time, and then those are issues that can also, like, take you by surprise if you don't think about them ahead of time. And so it's for the anxious future planners like me, those are the ones that keep you up at night while you're still working, and then for the folks who don't even think about it, those are the ones that keep you up after retirement.
Yeah. Now, what do you consider to be the number one thing that somebody should be doing if they're looking to retire in 5 years or so? That's what your book is. We talked about that earlier, the 5 years before you retire. Do you have a number one thing that you would suggest people start doing?
Yes. The number one thing that I would have people do is think about medical issues.
Really? Medical issues. Okay.
Yes. And the reason for that is that the average couple these days at age 65 will need about $250,000 for medical issues in retirement. And that is, at 65, you can be on Medicare. So that is on top of, Medicare covering a great number of things. So people, when they think about what they're going to need in retirement for medical issues, if they do think about it, which a lot of people don't, if they do think about it, they tend to think, oh, I think $50,000 should be enough to, have that set aside for medical issues. So that's something to think about. Now, if you know that your family has, perfect health, you're going to be in great health, you have good reason to believe you're going to stay in great health, it may not be as big of a concern. If you have already dealt with health problems, you may have already thought about it a little bit. But in general, I think that a lot of people don't realize just how expensive it can be to get sick in retirement.
All right. Well, I've got three breaks I got to take. One right now, one at 6:30, 6:29, right, Chris? One at 6:44, and we end the show at 6:59. So right now, I'm at my first break. I'm going to be right back, and I want to find out more about that 250,000 number you threw out just a little bit ago, how that was derived and so forth. But then we're going to talk about all the other things you need to do. But right now, we're going to traffic. We'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Personal finance has become a major area of stress due to the increasing dangers and complexities of the global economy. Personal financial management is a comprehensive approach to combating these issues, and the financial physical is the first step. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate, an independent fee-only firm. The financial physical begins with an objective analysis of your personal finances and ends with a plan to help achieve your goals. Experience the difference of the financial physical and learn how personal financial management can revolutionize your financial well-being. To learn more about the financial physical and the other services we offer, call us at 410-823-SAVE. That's 410-823-7283. Or the easy way to remember that, 410-823-SAVE. Or visit us online at DrewTig.com. That's DrewTig.com.
We're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're with Emily Guy Birkin, and you have a blog, right, Emily? That's where your main focus is?
I actually am a blogger for hire. I blog all around the Internet. I have a site, emilyguybirkin.com, but I actually write for a number of different sites, including ptmoney.com and Wisebread.
So, right, in addition to that, Chris, we're talking about her book tonight, the 5 years before you retire. She also wrote End Financial Stress Now.
That's a new one.
Yeah, that's a new one.
That's correct. That's coming out actually in just about 2 weeks.
Wow, great. But all your writing is always about financial things. Is that right?
For the most part, yeah. I kind of branch out into kind of peripheral things. Like I'm very interested in cars and how that is related to finances. My husband's an automotive engineer, so that's part of my interest. But then there's trying to figure out when to repair an aging car is one of the most perplexing questions in finance.
Well, there's no doubt.
Something I'm also very interested in.
Well, there's no doubt. And cars are probably one of the biggest waste of money that most people have in their finances, I would say, too. And how do you determine what do you spend on it? But anyway, let's get back to that. You threw out the number. You know, the average person is going to spend $250,000. Is that the number you threw out?
Mm-hmm.
So
that's out of date. According to Fidelity, it's $260,000 as of 2016.
Well, Fidelity said it's got to be true. What do you think? Anyway, so what? Where's that? Is that a cumulative number during your lifetime?
That is for health care in retirement for a couple retiring at age 65 in 2016.
Well, and that would seem logical because...
A couple, not each. That's a couple.
Not each.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that would be logical because the typical person's Medicare premium, Medigap, Medicare Part B, et cetera, is going to be about $3,000 a year. So for a couple, it's going to be about $6,000 a year. They're going to be retired for about 20 or 30 years. So I could see that number adding up to that easily.
And that's just with the baseline stuff, right?
That's just the baseline stuff. So, you know, one of the things that I think is the most important thing is cash flow. Cash flow and budgeting. You actually have that in the very first part of your book. How do you rate that?
I think that is the only reason why I put healthcare ahead of that is because people are surprised when I say that figure that Fidelity has come up with of the $250,000 to $260,000. Like that I have never said that to anyone for whom it wasn't a surprise. You know, and that includes people in the financial industry. That includes people who work in healthcare. So the only reason why I rank that higher than cash flow and budgeting is because there are so many people who just don't even think about it. And that's partially because, you know, if you enjoy good health through most of your life, it's hard to think of what it will cost and what you'll be dealing with if you have poor health in retirement. But absolutely, cash flow and knowing, being able to budget when you're on a fixed income is so much more important than being able to budget when you are working for a living and bringing in a paycheck regularly. And there are relatively few people who are able to budget when they're working. So absolutely, that's very, very important as well.
But you see, here's the thing, Emily, that, you know, we're talking to who knows how many people out there that listen to the radio show right now. And if we took a raise of hands as to how many people are keeping track of their cash flow so that they could even begin to budget, less than 10% of the people out there would say they're keeping their cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a sad.
It's a shame because, I find that like the more that you you treat your money well, the better it treats you for the most part. I mean, there are some issues that are just outside of people's control. But in a lot of ways, I think of money as being kind of like a marriage. You know, you don't want to go, oh, I don't want to think about you to your spouse. But that's how people think about money. And so you can't expect your money to treat you well if you treat it like that, in the same way you can't expect your spouse to treat you well if you, not you, they come into the room.
You have to keep track of it, and that's very important. Now, here's another one that you talk about, and that's accumulating money in your 401k and Roth. We do about 50 to 100 financial physicals a year for clients, and we're surprised at how many come in their late 50s, early 60s, and they're putting 4%, 5%, 6%, 7%, 8% of the. They're right. not even
sure.
Close to maxing
right.
out
Very
their 401k.
Few. Very few.
And that's one of those things that it's very hard to do just because of the way our brains are wired. You know, the future feels like another country. It feels like it's going to happen to someone other than ourselves. We actually, they have done brain studies where they find that human beings, when they think about themselves in the future, a part of their brain lights up that's the same part of the brain that lights up when you think about a stranger. Like, it really is that stark. So it's very hard for us to take care of ourselves, our future selves, because we think, oh, that's so far away, it's never going to get here. Forgetting that every moment of your life is connected to every other moment of your life, and that anything you do now is going to have great benefits in the future.
But, you know, one of the things that we do find interesting is how many of those same clients come in and they're trying to pay their mortgage down and they're putting all this extra money down trying to get their mortgage paid off before they retired. Where do you stand on that issue? Which should they focus on first, the 401k or paying down their mortgage?
Max out your ability to your 401k, absolutely. And then, I whatever you have left, work on paying down your mortgage. So it's kind of a both.
Yeah.
But I do think that you can, you know, depending on what happens, you know, the zombie apocalypse could always come and you can't sell your house, but you
the
can always sell
apocalypse.
Your house.
Yeah, didn't you see, you've seen that on the insurance commercials. It's,
oh, that's
it's
right.
Fact.
That's
it's
right.
Fact.
Did Fidelity say it though?
Well, not yet. They might.
All right. So max out the 401k, do the $24,000 per spouse if you can do it, and then start to focus on paying down the debt. I would agree with you wholeheartedly on that one. Here's another one you mentioned in the book, and then we experienced this so many times. Oh, this is the most frustrating of them all. The people who want to retire as soon as possible, and they're sending their kid they can't afford to $60,000 a year university.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to
mm-hmm.
spend $85,000 on their daughter's wedding, you know, and the list mm-hmm. goes on.
Well, and the thing that I try to, like, convey to my readers is think about, is your kid going to thank you for this in 30 years? So if in 30 years you have to move in with your child or less, in 10 years you have to move in with your child because you don't have enough money for your retirement because you paid for their education or their wedding, are they going to thank you for having to bankroll your retirement? The money's got to come from somewhere. And so you think that you're giving your child this gift, and I understand it, certainly. Like, I went to an expensive undergraduate institution. It was a point of pride for my father that my sister and I would go anywhere we wanted. And I feel strongly that I want to be able to give that to my kids, but not at the cost of my own retirement. Because if they have this education that I paid for, and then they have to pay for my retirement, it's not really a gift. It's a loan that's being paid off later.
Yeah, and you know, it's so many times you see parents who are doing these things that they think are incredible, loving and caring, but they're side railing, they're derailing their retirement, and you know, it's very obvious. You're just not going to be able to retire if you keep doing this. But you know, you addressed it a little bit a second ago, and we got to take our second pause in a second or two. But when we come back, you know, how much psychology influences personal financial planning? You ever experienced that much?
Oh, very much. Yes, that's actually my book that's forthcoming, End Financial Stress Now, is all about the psychology of money and financial planning and why our brains get in our way when we're trying to be rational about money.
Then we're going to have to do that book in a few months because when it comes out, because that's to my opinion, that's one of the biggest impacts on personal finances. But we got to take our pause with traffic. We're going to be right back with Emily Guy Birkin and Money, Riches, and Wealth. And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Emily Guy Birkin, who is does a lot of writing. This book that we're interviewing tonight is The 5 Years Before You Retire. And we were just talking about a new book coming out, The End of Financial Stress Now, or how's it?
Yeah, End Financial Stress Now. So Emily's a former educator and respected personal financial blogger out of Milwaukee. We talked about that. And so we appreciate her being with us.
So, Emily, the next topic I wanted to address is, and probably one of the most important, is so people nowadays don't have pensions. They get strictly Social Security, and then they got a whole bunch of money accumulated, hopefully, in 401k plans, IRAs, Roths, and they're wondering, you know, how do I distribute this to make sure that it's going to last my lifetime and I'll still be able to continue some lifestyle that I'm accustomed to. What are your suggestions on how you do that?
Well, so one of the problems with retirement planning is we beat the you have to save drum so hard, and you know, I will never claim that you shouldn't be saving, but that means that once you get to retirement, you don't know what to do with the money. So my suggestion is for people to use what's called the bucket method. That's the way to withdraw your money and access your money without overly. I'm sorry, I have a dog going crazy in the other room.
I heard it. But, what kind of dog is it?
We have a greyhound.
A greyhound? All mm-hmm. right. Was it yeah. a rescue greyhound, or did you buy one of purebred?
He's a retired racer, yeah.
A retired racer. Cool. All right, so the bucket method. I like that. You know, I like that. I actually had heard that before, but you really made a lot more clarity to it. So explain to people what's the bucket method and how it works.
So the bucket method is a way of making sure that your money lasts. So what you do is, instead of thinking of your money as this one big amount of money that you take from, because it's all in one place, you need to remember that you need money to last different amounts depending on when you're going to use it. So the first bucket is going to be money that you put into relatively easy to get assets. So, I mean, that could be some bonds, that could be savings accounts, that could be CDs. So you're not expecting a great deal of return on that, but you know that it's going to be there and it's going to be ready for you when you retire. And that's particularly important, you know, after seeing in 2008 people planning on retiring then and everything just took a nosedive. If you have money in a safe asset like that, you can still retire on time without having to overly draw down your account. So that's the first bucket, and it's going to be for, like, years 1 through 5. Then the second bucket will be for years, like, say, 6 through 15. You want money in that and still relatively stable but more growth-oriented assets. So more like bonds there. And so that's something that you know that you'll be receiving some return on that, but you're not counting on it to, you know, really grow. That's what that third bucket is for, and it's something that I want people to understand is just because you retire doesn't mean you're done investing, because you still can have a long timeline in retirement if you trust that you have money in a bucket that you're not going to be accessing until you're 15 years plus into retirement. So you do have time to let the markets grow. So that's where you put money that you can allow to grow a little more aggressively, because you're not counting on it right away.
Yeah, and I like the concept. I thought it made a lot of sense. And but, you know, now the question would be, there's a lot of people who do radio shows, and they're touting to people, you should buy these annuities, and they kind of imply that they're going to get a 5 or 7% rates of return and all these wonderful things. What's your take on that concept?
So annuities are something that I feel like people need to be very cautious about. Now, I think that an annuity product can be the right product for some retirees. And that's because there are people out there who really just want to know that they're going to be getting what amounts to a paycheck every month. And if they are able to find an annuity that's going to work for them, I think that's great. Now, the problem with annuities is, A, there are some really convoluted, complex, difficult-to-understand products out there, and B, they're sold by people who are getting a commission on them. So that's where you need to be really careful with an annuity, and my rule of thumb for it is, if you are, you know, someone's trying to sell you an annuity product, if you can go and explain it to another person so that they understand it as well as or better than you do, then you're probably looking at a product that will work for you. But if the minute you walk out of the sales presentation, you go, wait, what's going to happen now? How does that work? How does this happen? If you can't explain it, then you should not invest in it.
Yeah, and I don't think, you know, a lot of people think that some of these annuities that are being touted are actually paying a rate of return of 5 or 7%, almost like a CD, and mm-hmm. there's nothing further from the truth. That's a pure mm-hmm. misleading presentations. I mean, they're not doing anything false. They're just doing mm-hmm. it in a way that is grossly misleading. Would you agree mm-hmm. with that?
Oh, absolutely. And that's something my dad was a financial planner, so I grew up in the industry. And one of the things that he taught me both directly and kind of more obliquely was embrace your paranoia when it comes to money.
I like that.
And it has served me well. I don't give to people going door to door. It's funny because I tend to be the soft touch, but my husband's the one who like has given to people who are soliciting door to door. I'm like, never, never, never. And similarly, you know, if we hear of a prospect, he's like, oh, let's check this out. And I like, what's in it for them? That's always the question that I come up with is, you know, if someone is offering me a product that's going to solve all of my problems, why?
Yeah.
What's in it for them? Well, it's very easy to get dollar signs in your eyes, but you don't want to do that.
Yeah, especially some of these annuity products where you hear them saying, you know, you're going to get a 7% bonus up front. You're going to get this 7% rate of return. You know that the person sold it to you is getting at least a 7 to 10% commission. And you sit back and anybody with any logic looking at that and thinking about that is going to say, that ain't in my best interest.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way it can work.
Anytime it seems like too much of a good thing, it probably is.
Yeah, I would agree wholeheartedly. So when the next thing we got to talk about is Social Security, because that's, you know, they always talked about Social Security being the three legs of the stool. Well, I think it's becoming like the main support leg of the stool.
Sadly, a huge number of people rely on Social Security for... 90% or more of their retirement income. I believe it's something like 20% of single retirees are relying on that much of it, and that is just unacceptable. And for one thing, I have a bit of an issue with thinking of Social Security as one leg of your retirement stool. And the problem with it is Social Security is a government program, and that means that it can be changed and has been recently with the stroke of a pen. So if you are counting on it as one-third of your retirement program, that is not – this is going to be a shaky stool if they decide to make a change suddenly. And back in 2015, they did. They, with a stroke of a pen, got rid of the file and suspend rule, which it's long and convoluted what it did, but it was a way for married couples to maximize their benefits. And all of a sudden, people who were planning on retiring and getting Social Security within the next 8 to 10 months, it was gone, that amount of money, and it could have equaled up to like $50,000 over retirement that was going to make a difference of.
You're absolutely right.
That's a problem.
Yeah, that is a problem. So, well, we're headed into our last part of the show already, and I've got to take my last pause, but when we come back, we'll address Medicare and a little more on Social Security and anything else you feel that's important for somebody to think about 5 years before they retire. Right now, we got to go to traffic. We'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
75% of adults agree they could benefit from advice and answers to everyday financial questions from a professional. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consult. We strive to serve as a leader in educating the public on personal finance topics through our Financial Pulse and Consulate Journal. For these publications and learn about our personal financial management services, visit our website at drewtig.com, drewtig.com, and follow us on Twitter at the FinCon for educational updates.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Emily Guy Birkin and her book, The 5 Years Before You Retire. And, I really liked it because she really addressed every single topic that somebody should be thinking about headed into retirement. And she dealt in them in a very solid, well-researched, way. If somebody just wants a quick, easy guide to take them through and they already know a lot of what they're doing, they don't need a lot of extra help, this is an incredible guide for them. So I really appreciate that, Emily.
Thank you.
So one of the things you wrote in the book that I also thought was interesting is you got a quote from a friend of yours. I can't remember where it is in the book, but she said something like this. You don't want to look for an advisor that you just trust. The first thing you want to look for is an advisor that is skilled and knowledgeable, because trust can be faked. I thought that was fascinating.
Hmm.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that I find really interesting about the financial industry, and also I you know, as we talked about with the psychology of money and things like that, is that a lot of what we are now discovering in behavioral economics is stuff that marketers and con men and scam artists have known forever.
Okay.
We just now have the scientific names for it. And so some of that sort of thing is, like, it's very easy to seem like a trustworthy person. This, you know, gets back to my feeling that I should embrace my paranoia. And so that is true with you know, people in the financial industry. You know, you get this sense like, oh, thank goodness there's this person and he's so nice and I can trust him with my money and I know everything will be fine and I don't have to think about it. You know, I have fallen victim to that too, even as someone who has been writing about money for 7 years now, and I grew up in the financial industry. You know, the first time I met with a financial advisor who was not my father, it was nerve-wracking, and I kind of wanted to be able to just, like, hand everything over to my dad and just be like, I can trust you to do this and everything will be fine. But, you know, at that point I was an adult, I was living in another state, and I needed to be able to get past that feeling like, if I just give this to someone I trust, quote unquote, then I don't have to think about it. Well, that's not exactly how it should or needs to work. What you need to do is recognize that no one is going to care about your money as much as you do. And trust can be faked. Very easily. You know, people make careers out of faking trust. And what you want is someone who is knowledgeable, who's willing to work with you, and who in some ways is going to be kind of your educator, because ultimately you are need to be the person behind the wheel. You want someone who can help you make the decisions that are going to be difficult to make, you know, without having the you know, financial education background. But ultimately you do need to take ownership of your decisions, because you are the one who's going to have to live with them.
Do you think most people should wait as long as possible before they collect Social Security?
In general, yes. You know, there are some folks who they have to take Social Security early because otherwise they're just not going to be able to keep the lights on. But in general, the longer you can put off your Social Security benefits, the better off you're going to be. And it's not just you. You also need to think about, if you're married, about survivor benefits when either you or your spouse eventually passes away. The longer you wait, the better the widow or widower benefits will be, and those sorts of things. And it's also important to note, like, there are some books out there that are like, everyone should wait till they're 70. Well, you know, that's not necessarily true for everyone. Not everyone can make it that far. The longer you can wait, the better it is. So if you get to where you're not quite at your full retirement age, and you just can't, you have to retire for one reason or another, you just can't make the finances work, that's still better than taking it at 62.
Yeah, and I think life expectancy is one of the most important questions to ask, is what's your health, what's your spouse's health, what are your life, you know, I mean, you don't ask it necessarily in those terms, but that's what a professional should be thinking about. Is there any reason to believe that one of the two of you is going to pass away before 80 years of age or something like that?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's one of the things that's really tough about these kinds of calculations, is because it starts with, like, okay, so when are you going to die?
Yeah, really.
Out backwards, which of course is not only impossible to know, but incredibly depressing. The other thing to think about is we have this tendency to think about Social Security as something, as a zero-sum game where you're ahead. They used to do this where you would look at when you would break even, the break-even point, if you start taking benefits at 62, if you start taking it at full retirement age, or wait till 70. The problem with looking at it, the break-even point, is the only way to win is to die young.
Hmm.
So if you start taking benefits at age 62 up until age 77, you're ahead in total amount of money that you would get than if you waited for full retirement age or age 70. But the thing is, like, that the winning from that is dying before age 77.
Right.
And actually, the worst thing that could happen to you is not dying young. The worst thing that could happen to you is living to be 120.
Yep.
And not having enough money for it.
So let's go into Medicare. That's the last part. And, you know, Medicare, as many pitfalls as it has, it's actually an incredible medical plan for seniors.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we do it?
So, well, Medicare, the thing about Medicare, when I was researching the book, my husband would come home and every night I'd be like, they're making people's nanas research this. This is really complicated. And I was getting indignant on the part of, you know, America's grandmothers and grandfathers because it is not a simple system and it can get very confusing. And so the thing that I want people to do and think about with Medicare is before you get there, get a book about it, you know, do some research. There are blogs you can read. You can, talk with your financial advisor and start thinking ahead of time about what's going to be the best option for you. Just because there are a lot of options out there, it gets very confusing. And if you wait until you are, you know, needing it, at age 65 or you are getting sick, after having enrolled at age 65, then it's going to be a lot harder to get the best options for you than if you are proactive about it and think about it before you need it.
You know, it's funny you say about how complicated it is. Just about 3 months ago, I was with a client of ours who's a tax attorney and a former IRS commissioner. I mean, literally the head of the IRS. And I was with him helping him and his wife get on Medicare. And by the time I was finished, he looks at me and he says, Drew, how the heck do the average senior figure this out with a guy like you doing it for them? And I said, well, it's not easy. They got to go to AARP volunteers to help them. They got to go to the state. They're going to their, you know, they're going and just hoping somebody will help them slough through this. But it is difficult, isn't it?
It's very complex. And, you know, I when I wrote 5 years Before You Retire, at the time I was 34, so, you know, years out. So I had written a little bit on Medicare previously, but this is the first time I did a real deep dive into it. And it was very, very difficult to figure out what was necessary for what. And I did not have the looming specter of my own needs on top of it, because trying to figure that out while you're also worried about your own health or your own finances just makes it that much more difficult. So that's why I talk about, you know, being proactive and try to find, you know, books that are written for the average person, which can be hard to do. One of my goals with writing 5 years Before You Retire and all of my finance writing is to make it easy to understand and applicable to the layperson who really has no idea, you know, going into what I'm writing,
Emily,
what they need.
We are out of time, believe it or not. That's anytime we have a great guest, things really fly. So tell everybody how they can follow you.
You can find me at EmilyGuyBurkin.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at EmilyGuyBurkin, and that's EmilyGuyBurkin.
Well, it's fantastic. I really appreciate it. And your book is really an excellent resource for somebody who's looking for just a guide 5 years before you retire. I really appreciate your time with us, Emily.
I've really enjoyed it.
Well, Chris, we're out of time. And so we've got to say, this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.